Good afternoon, members. I always wanted to be able to bring a transportation committee to order. My father would be proud. He was 41 years for MnDOT, so I'll have to send this. He's still in Mexico, but he'll think that's pretty cool. Representative Torkelson, we have House File. Are you here? Yes, House File 1415. Members, I'd like to move House File 1415 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Correct. You're not going anywhere? Okay,
that's
just laid over.
Chair.
Okay.
I talked to the environment chair. He said,
time out, Representative Torkelson. Okay, thank you, members. Audience. Go ahead, Representative Torkelson. Please
thank
explain
you,
your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill comes to you from the Ag Committee, where it was passed out last week. And I've talked to the environment chair, and he has said he does not need to hear it in his committee. That's my understanding anyway, Mr. Chair. House File 1415 deals with applying manure with a drag line. For those of you who aren't familiar with the process, on some farms, instead of loading the manure into a spreader or a truck and hauling it to the field, we use flexible hose to actually pump the manure from the manure storage facility to the field. These lines can go actually a number of miles if they use booster pumps in the process. The advantages are many. Where instead of wear and tear on the roads by putting it in trucks and spreaders, we're keeping it off the road. And this bill, the way the rules work today, you can run perpendicular to the highway. If you need to run across the highway, you can run the line perpendicular to the highway to get to the field on the other side of the road. But the DOT has declined to allow these lines to run parallel to the road. This simple change in language in 1415 would allow these lines to run parallel to the road as far away from the highway as possible. There was an amendment, but we're not going to offer it. We've agreed to work out the details with DOT before it goes into the omnibus bill. There is a fiscal note that you should have. It's a small amount of money, and it comes out of the trunk highway fund, so I don't believe there's a fiscal issue here, Mr. Chair. I have a testifier somewhere.
You have a testifier. He might be right behind you. If he wants to come forward, well, Representative Uglem, you want to move the minutes of March 18th? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Mr. McBeth, welcome. If you want to identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Darren McBeth, Great Plant Moody Law Firm, representing the Minnesota Milk Producers Association and Minnesota's dairy industry does from time to time, depending on the size and timing of the year and size of their lagoon, uses the drag lines, gets access through MnDOT for right-of-way permitting on occasion where the pump facilities are near a trunk highway. There are, at a convenience, sometimes when running down the right-of-way, down a ditch to the property where they're going to apply the manure is more convenient than only being able to run perpendicular under a highway. And it has to do with when crops are in or not in and that permit. And I might add, this is really just a common sense, simple thing. The permits take care of all the safeguards that manure applicators must have to be certified and for safety, for egress of different approaches and other driveways. They attempt to run underneath, through culverts or underneath. There can be an occasion where, as the permit would require, up to an 8-inch diameter flex tube pipe may be on top of the road, but accommodation is made for vehicles to safely drive over top of the lines. And again, that's all there's different seals and environmental safeguards that MnDOT requires with the permit for all that. So this would simply just allow parallel to the highway down to the property where it needs to be applied instead of only perpendicular and then through fields that may or may not work well depending on the time of the year.
Okay, thank you. Discussion. Is there anyone in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Is there anyone in the audience?
Here.
Go ahead. If you could come forward, sir, if you could identify yourself for the record. If there's anyone else that wants to speak for or against the bill, could you go check in with the pages? Welcome, sir. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Joe Pignato, Minnesota Department of Transportation, Office of Land Management. I'm the Assistant Director of Right-of-Way. And just wanted to let the committee know that we are working with Representative, and we do have some concerns, but I think we can work through them on that. So.
And what are your concerns?
There are some benefits and there's some concerns that we have. We've been talking to a lot of folks throughout MnDOT, and the one big benefit that we do see is that it does take some large trucks off the pavement on some of our low volume roads, which will save the pavements, that sort of thing. But our concerns are, related to placement of the pipe, where it will be, the pumps that are out there. They're fairly large metal objects within the right-of-way. So those types of issues that we are working with the representative to see what we can and can't do.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not for this testifier, but wondering if the department's here.
Okay. Representative Torkelson, to the testifier's concerns, is it your plan that the pumps would be on the right-of-way also?
No, Mr. Chair. There's no desire to put the booster pumps on the right-of-way.
Okay. Thank you. And you're working with the department to get the hose as far back as practical, I would assume.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We'd keep these hoses as far away from the pavement as possible.
Thank you. Representative, any other questions for the testifier? No. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the department here? I've got a question on the fiscal note.
Representative Drazkowski, the testifier is from the department.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the fiscal note, I'm looking here that the fiscal note is estimating $2 million per year, $4 million in a biennium for what appears to be 20 permits.
Representative Drazkowski, $4,000.
Oh.
Pocket change, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The department's going the right way.
No, thank you. Additional questions for the testifier? Members, House File 1415 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Thank you to the department for coming forward. Next, members, you're going to go right now. Here, I've got Representative Fenton, are you in the audience?
Yeah.
You here? Why don't you come forward? I'm sorry, Representative Drazkowski? I'm sorry, I skipped you, Representative Drazkowski. They're already coming. You're okay?
Yeah.
Your guy from Goodhue, the snow's going to melt if he waits a little longer. Let's see, anybody from I-94 around here? Representative Fenton, I believe I'm probably the closest to you, so I'll move House File 1856 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's also an author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like it. Could we have that moved as well?
Representative Fenton, is it the A2? I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Oh, I got the wrong bill because I did them out of order. Okay. Representative Fenton, do you want to just... okay, so it is just technical... you're adding Oakdale to the cities involved. Any questions to that amendment? I'll move the A1 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any discussion? All those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Welcome, Representative Fenton, and welcome, Mayor, to the committee. Representative Fenton, why don't you explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill is calling for a study improvement in the interchange, 69 interchange at 694, 494 at 94. This bill kind of came about. We are a growing community in the East Metro. Currently, right there is a new headquarter for a company being built at this interchange. But as the mother of a young driver, I heard from a lot of people while I was door knocking that in terms of transportation, could we look at this? It scares me having my child drive and change on this interchange. And I think you're going to hear from many community leaders who have also been concerned about this, and we're going to start with the mayor of Woodbury. So I'd like to turn it over to Mayor Stevens.
Representative, thank you.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you.
You could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Yes. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Mary Giuliani Stevens, and I'm the mayor of Woodbury. Just for context, Woodbury is the ninth largest city in the state of Minnesota with a population in excess of 67,000 people. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to speak in support of House File 1856, calling for safety improvement studies on the 694, 494, 94 interchange. Just for context, I think most of you might have this in your packet. It's basically just an overview of that area. I'd just like to point out that the interchange is really significant and vital for not only the East Metro, but really the entire state of Minnesota. As you can see, it's the first interchange as you enter Minnesota from Wisconsin. And Commissioner White is going to talk about the freight traffic and impacts on that, so I'm not going to duplicate her testimony. But in addition to the trucks, hundreds of thousands of vehicles pass through this interchange daily, and it is a very congested and dangerous interchange. In fact, when the interstate jams up with congestion, it does bleed back into both Radio Drive, which is highlighted in red on this map, and Tamarack Road. And I believe the mayor of Oakdale will talk about the impacts when it backs up on 10th Street. And the reason I mention that is really it causes then secondary safety and congestion issues both in Woodbury and in Oakdale. Representative Fenton talked about the activity around there. We're seeing significant commercial development in that area. But even that, you're expecting continued commercial development and traffic and trucks to come in that area and increase down the road. Safety is a real concern, so I want to speak to safety. Among the intersections that have similar geometric shapes and volumes, there's only one that ranks higher than this one in the state. And I think that's the 694-35W interchange. And if I'm not mistaken, that is slated in some plan to get improvements. So there's only one that ranks worse for crash rates and severity of crashes. And that takes into consideration the design of it, the volume, the trucks, all contribute to the fact that it is raised to this level. Over the last 5 years, the interchange has averaged 111 crashes per year, so that's one crash every 3.2 days. We really think the study and analysis being asked for is warranted at this time, and the data will tell us what's necessary to do then. The region recognizes the importance of this intersection, and I'll just indicate that they've recognized it needs safety and congestion improvements. The Met Council has adopted it into the newly adopted transportation policy plan as one of the intersections needing study. Woodbury does support this and believes that the study is needed. We need to start this process somewhere. And then I just want to note, Commissioner White is going to testify to this more specifically, but it's 3 pages worth of 3 years of the crashes that actually happened at that intersection, if you want more detail on that. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and testify, and I'd certainly entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Any questions for Mayor Juliana Stevens?
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi, go ahead.
I felt telepathy there.
Yes.
You're looking at me. Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question, and I don't know if our testifiers can answer this or not. It might take MnDOT to do this. I'm wondering where this falls on MnDOT's 20-year plan and what MnDOT has in cooking on this one and what their plans are for it.
Do you want me to answer
what I know, or would you like to come down and answer that?
Chair and Representative, my understanding
is that it's currently not in the plan, their 20-year plan. I did write a letter within the time period detailing some of the things that we talked about today. My understanding is that MnDOT does not oppose this amendment, however, or the bill.
Representative Bernardi, follow up.
Okay, so then what this proposal is to do a study on this intersection to figure out what needs to happen to make it more effective or safer?
Mr. Chairman, it represents.
Mayor.
Yes, it's a study.
Representative Bernardi. Okay, thank you. Why don't you go to your next testifier? I think we have Mayor Kowalski of Oakdale. Mayor, if you want to come forward. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. Stan Karwanski, Mayor of Oakdale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, as the Woodbury Mayor pointed out, we actually share half of this intersection to the north of 94. So we're I've been driving, living in Oakdale for 28 years, and I drive through this area twice a day. And it's evolved to be so bad that it's not only a rush hour thing; it's almost throughout the entire day. It's so backed up that you almost think it should be an accident in the area, and there's not one. There's a lot of semis that are rolling over because of the abruptness of the problem. We're at 10th Street, north of here. We're opening up a Hy-Vee grocery store. It's the first Hy-Vee to open up in the metro area. In combination with our city of Oakdale and the county, we're making significant investments to 10th Street. And we're trying to get commerce and a lot of retail volume there, and I think improving this freeway would only help us grow Oakdale in our 10th Street area. Also on the northeast corner, we have a developer there that wants to develop out the corner and combine with the Carlson Business Park that's near Guardian Angels Church has been slow to develop, and only good transportation will help that development and growth of jobs and employment. But it is a big safety thing for Oakdale.
Thank you. Questions for the mayor? Appreciate it, Mayor. Thank you for coming forward. I think, Commissioner, you might be next. Commissioner White, if you want to come forward and give us your testimony. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good afternoon. My name is Lisa White, and I'm a Washington County Commissioner representing District 5, which is the majority of Woodbury. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House File 1856. The freeway interchange at the intersection of Interstates 494, 694, and 94 is one of the busiest interchanges in the East Metro, and in fact is also one of the busiest interchanges in the entire state, handling well over 175,000 vehicles daily in a rapidly growing area of Washington County, linking us to the eastern manufacturing destinations of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Detroit. I-94, entering Minnesota through Washington County, is a freight-moving powerhouse. And this interchange is the first freeway junction that vehicles encounter as they enter our state from the east. In fact, trucks destined to locations west of the metro are directed to exit I-94 and use the Beltway, either 694 or 494, as a Twin Cities bypass. So it can be said that whether commercial trucks are destined for locations within the metro or if they'll bypass the Twin Cities, every piece of freight that enters the state of Minnesota via the I-94 corridor must navigate through the 694-494 interchange. Of the 175,000 daily vehicles merging at that junction, a full 12,500 of them are heavy vehicles, such as tractor trailers, double trailers, and other large commercial trucks moving at different speeds than regular traffic. To put that number into perspective, if you lined up all of those trucks end to end, the line would measure 100 miles long, carrying products and services to market. The ability to move freight efficiently through our metro area is important for the long-term economic vitality of the entire region. Congestion comes at a high price. In fact, congestion in the Twin Cities area in 2013 cost the trucking industry nearly $191 million in operational costs. That is over $300,000 per interstate mile in Minnesota. Right now, the junction of these interstate highways is a problem needing a solution. You see, it was originally constructed in the early 1980s utilizing a cloverleaf design and is simply no longer sufficient to handle the growing traffic and freight demands, due in part to the tight curvature of the exit ramps contributing to many truck rollovers that also lead to significant backups on the Beltway. We've all driven cloverleaf interchanges and know how hard it can be to merge into and out of traffic in the short distances provided to do so, while also sharing the road with large semis moving at different speeds. This problem escalates as traffic volumes increase. It is also important to note that no major freeway improvements are planned for I-94 east of St. Paul within the next 15 years. This safety and capacity analysis can't wait until after 2030. In fact, this interchange is shown in Met Council's recently adopted transportation policy plan and merits review. House File 1856 would require MnDOT to perform a safety improvement study of the interchange, which is warranted to determine root cause of the accidents and how best to improve the interchange design to eliminate crashes with their related costs in personal injuries, property damage, and increased insurance rates. This is a problem we cannot ignore. When there are accidents and crashes every 3 days, I think we can all agree we must do better to improve the safety of the traveling public and handle the increasing volumes of freight and do it safely and efficiently for a prosperous future. In conclusion, Washington County strongly supports House File 1856 to require a safety and capacity improvement study for this important junction of interstate highways in the East Metro that will allow us to make data-driven decisions and support economic vitality of the entire metropolitan region. Please refer to the dot maps that are collision diagrams for the years 2010, 11, and 12, and I'll stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question isn't, the three testifiers, I think, have told their story well, and we can be very, very sympathetic. I think my question would be with the department, if...
And Representative Hausman, I was anticipating we would ask the department to come in and weigh in on the fact that there's no money involved and get their feelings on it. I don't know. Mr. Peterson, if you want to come forward now. I also see Representative Ward is here, and maybe she wants to weigh in at some point. She's a co-author on the bill. But Representative, or Mr. Peterson, did you hear? I think Representative Hausman, why don't you state your question? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we can all appreciate the problem. By the way, we've been tracking all the bonding bills introduced in the House and the Senate by both Republicans and Democrats. And someday I'll give the committee the percentage of bills that are transportation related. It's quite a staggering story, I think. But in reality, what happens here? We're asking for a study and a report. What's the effect of that? So you study and you report. What then? What's anybody's expectation, do you think?
Mr. Peterson, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. And Representative Hausman, my understanding is that this study would identify, or let me back up a little bit, would analyze the crashes that have occurred in this interchange. And from that information, look at the types of improvements that might be available to be made in order to address the crashes, if there are some. So, you know, I don't know that it would result in a recommendation for a wholesale, large improvement to the interchange. There might be some things that could be addressed with, you know, an extension of a merging lane or maybe, you know, easing a curve in one of the ramps that are there. I mean, it's hard to say without knowing, but that would be my assessment of what would be a logical outcome of this study. So there'd be an analysis of the data that's available about crashes and what causes the crashes, and then probably a list of potential strategies that could be undertaken in order to address the cause of the crashes.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Hall,
my reason for asking is we don't want to give false hope to a community. But I'm assuming, let's say the evidence is so compelling and your department changes. Right now you have a plan. You've got your long-range plan, and this isn't included. But if you include this, something else drops off, right?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, are you asking if we do this study, something else drops off, or if we were to undertake an improvement identified or recommended?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that community wants more than a study. If they find out this is a compelling argument, I assume they want this project moved up the list and dealt with more quickly. But if that were to happen, something else drops off, right? Because you've already got your long-range plan programmed.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I think it would depend upon the outcome of the study. You know, I think every year we update our state transportation improvement program, and as part of that update, we look at an amount of money that we have set aside to invest in safety improvements statewide. Some of the more recent efforts to spend that money have included some of the cable median guardrail that you see a lot of now on four-lane expressways, rumble strips in the outstate, some intersection improvements, those kinds of things. If, as part of this study, there were some fixes that were identified that could address some of the causes of the safety problems that could be addressed with the relatively modest amount of money that's available there, one could see where maybe the improvement there would have a greater impact on safety than an improvement someplace else. You know, it's really hard to say. If it turned out that, well, there's really nothing that can be done short of a large-scale reconfiguration of the interchange, and I suspect that the project would continue to sit where it's at on the list. I mean, we're aware of the overall safety issues that occur there because we track those through our crash facts, but again, this is a more in-depth and I think detailed look at the interchange itself and what could possibly be done.
Representative Hausman. Okay, good. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This black and white sketch here, is that an actual MnDOT sketch or just somebody's doodling here? Or
Mr. Peterson, it's not yours. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Earhart, that is from MnDOT.
Oh.
Well, the reason I'm asking that is because this is the old four-leaf clover interchange, and this thing might be horrendous as it sounds, might be something that is of a much newer design that has been used elsewhere. That's why I'm at. And it isn't just, if it's just a sketch of an old design, why, then we can probably disregard it, know that it's going to be many millions or more to really do this than what we're looking at here.
Mr. Peterson, comment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, that looks very much like the configuration of the interchange out there. It's very similar to the one at 35W and 494 that I'm sure you're familiar with. The only difference is that on the east-west portion of 94, the merging lanes are separated from the through lanes. But on the 494, 694 part, it's very much the same. So, yeah, I mean, to undertake some of the real improvements that would really have significant benefit, it would be a very expensive project.
Well, Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, then I would suspect that the bill that was just introduced, that $7 billion, with $2 billion of it being not new money but bonding, would hardly be sufficient to reach out to do a project like this.
I don't see any comment, Representative Earhart. Anybody, Representative Ward, did you want to make a comment? I know you're lead co-author. Or were you not done, Representative Earhart? You were done?
No, I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that I just heard of about a $7 billion bill that was being programmed today or released today with $2 billion of it being bonding, which is only then $5 billion of new money, and maybe even that isn't until you look at the details. It's not going to be nearly enough to carry a multi-million dollar project like this is going to be, I'm sure, forward, if it's not even on the list now. We've got to see that we get more money into the transportation system so that things like this, which are causing traffic congestion and deaths, are taken care of. That's all. Just a simple statement.
Thank you, Representative Earhart, for your thoughtful comments. Welcome, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to just drop a few words on or add a few words to this. I'm Joanne Ward. I represent this district. This is actually my district. And Representative Earhart, I think you're not far off on this because this whole project has grown over 30 plus years. And think about the changes in our transportation needs over that period of time. This stretch of 94 that you see just on the left side of your drawing, that part that goes in front of 3M was the last stretch of 94 to become an interstate highway, and I believe that was the late 80s. Last stretch of 94 across the entire country. It went from a two-lane to a four-lane. You know, it's just grown. When the interchange at Valley Creek, which is at the bottom right or bottom left of your page, when that was put in, they said they would never put another interchange between there and 94 because there wasn't room. Well, they had to put the Tamarack in. So they've kept adding things and adding things, trying to be responsive to the needs of the community. And but what you're seeing is a funnel. That's a pinch point in the whole transportation infrastructure coming from the east, going to the east. It's a funnel, and it's a dangerous one. I go through it every day, at least twice a day. If I want to go north, south, or west, I have to go through that intersection. And it's truly frightening. The reason I believe that there are no more accidents than there are, I'm surprised it's only one every 3.2 days or whatever, is that people do slow down, which means, too, that it's slowing down the everybody who's trying to get someplace. Think of the freight that's going through there. It's going more slowly because they have to. If they went at the posted speeds, if they went at the speeds that you would expect them to be able to go through a major interchange in the metropolitan area, the accidents would be much, much higher. I thank you for your attention to this, and I believe that the other testifiers have explained the need very well, and I thank Representative Fenton for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to address what Representative Earhart had said, if he was referencing a $7 billion program that was released today, of which he didn't think that may not be able to fund projects such as this, well, if a $7 billion program wouldn't cover that, well, then certainly a $6 billion program, which was released earlier, would not be able to cover it.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chairman,
Representative Earhart.
I think it's only fair that I say, I released a $12 billion one a week ago. So in case you missed that one would take care of it.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. Representative Fenton, final comments.
Thank you so much. As you've heard from our community leaders here, what this is about safety. This bill calls for a safety study, which will allow us to know what we are dealing with so that we can plan for the future. So this is a good bill. People, whether they're new drivers or experienced drivers, continually talk about this interchange and will actually drive out of their way to avoid it. So in an effort to improve the safety of our citizens, I ask that you consider this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. House File 1856 is laid over. Representative Drazkowski, you have House File 1450, and I think you said you have a testifier. And our understanding is, Representative Drazkowski, this is a relatively short bill, and I believe, do you know where it's going, Representative Drazkowski? You need to go to taxes.
It's going to taxes, Mr. Chair.
You want to make that motion?
I will, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1450 be passed and referred to taxes.
Representative Drazkowski, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With me today is Dan Matega, who is the city administrator in the city of Goodview, which is a population just over 4,000 in southeastern Minnesota in my district. And appreciate you getting us in here because, as many of the people in my district are, Dan is a very hardworking individual and wants to get back to his work for the good people of the city of Goodview. So this bill, members, creates an account for state transportation funding for cities under 5,000. So those cities that do not receive funding from the municipal state aid account. And that's essentially what it is, Mr. Chair. There is, I think, run that goes with it. I've got an amendment to the bill. Actually, I have two amendments to the bill, if I could apply them, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski, do you want to move the A2 amendment first?
I will, Mr. Chair.
You could explain it.
I will move the A2 amendment. There's also an adjustment to the amendment, Mr. Chair, on line 1.825. The number 25 should be 30. And I would
Representative Drazkowski moves the A2 amendment and makes an oral amendment on line 1.8, change 25, so it would read 30%. Representative Drazkowski,
that's correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And that is simply a typo, and so that would correct the amendment. It lines up perfectly then, Mr. Chair, with the runs I think that may have been created. I don't know if they're in members' packets or not, but Maybe we don't have runs in the members' packets for the different towns. But this changes the approach and allocation. We had we have in the bill an approach and allocation that sends the money to the small cities based on per capita amounts, 50% and 50% on lane miles. And this adds a third measurement or part of that approach that also includes the a factor that factors in the amount of state or of county highways within that jurisdiction. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Questions to the A2? All those in favor of the A2 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A2 is adopted. Representative Drazkowski, you have the A4, and we did not have the runs, Representative Drazkowski, but you just note it was based on a combination of population and lane miles within the small cities. But
I will email them out to members, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Drazkowski, the committee administrator, Mr. Marble, will do that. But Representative Drazkowski, do you want to move the A3 amendment and explain that?
I will move the A3 amendment, Mr. Chair. And the A3 amendment, members, is from feedback from Representative Moran in the last committee, which was in, we were in Representative Gunther's committee, actually. And the suggestion was that we add some accountability in there. That's an accountability piece that basically says that the city needs to include in its reporting for the people of Minnesota and the state auditor to see how much they spent from this program or this account in a given year, so that we could see that it's actually being used for the purpose for which it is intended. That's the A3, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any discussion to the A3? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A3 is adopted. Representative Drazkowski, why don't we have your testifier go next? If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dan Mateka, and I am the city administrator for the city of Goodview, Minnesota, in southeast Minnesota. And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you today. The city of Goodview has a population, as the representative pointed out, of just short of 4,100. Our annual budget is approximately $1.7 million, of which only about 15% of that is funded by LGA. Up to this year, the city has taken a very stern stance of not raising taxes, with 2015 being the first year since 2010 that taxes were raised. And one of the main reasons for that was the city council came to the conclusion that something needed to be done to help our city roads, something more than just crack filling. Safety for our taxpayers has always been a driving force for our city at budget time, whether this was additional appropriations for our police department or our fire department. However, having good roads is also a major component of safety for our residents, but unfortunately, this has all too often been a component of the proposed budget that was either reduced or eliminated in order to keep our tax levy down. And 2015 budget was a prime example of this, when city staff presented a proposed budget of nearly $230,000 in street repairs, a figure that is basically the norm for us for the next 5 years based on projections, only to see that figure cut in half to help rectify the ultimate bottom line of keeping any tax levy increase to a minimum. Small cities like Goodview, with populations less than 5,000, have the same obligations to its residents as cities with populations over that magic figure do when it comes to keeping our roads in good, safe conditions. However, bigger cities receive municipal state aid to help their cause, while smaller cities, such as Goodview, need to balance all the needs of the city when it comes to budget times. House File 1450, the Small Cities Assistance Program, would help treat all cities relatively the same by appropriating funds designated for roads and bridges, an initiative that I believe would be welcomed with open arms by all cities throughout the state and for sure by the residents and taxpayers of Goodview. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing me today.
Any additional questions for the testifier? Representative Hausman.
Okay. Mr. Chair, again, not for the testifier, but likely for the department, sort of like the last question. Although, maybe to the gentleman who just testified, you know, one of the things I always struggle with, Mr. Chair, if I could, about the state's partnership on local roads and bridges is how we keep the the responsibility on the local government to plan well. In other words, how do we assure if the state is partnering that the local government doesn't overbuild, or once you have a revenue stream coming to you, is there a temptation to do more than you might have if you had had to bear the responsibility yourself on the local road?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member. I can tell you that we base our projections on a study that we go through every single year to look at our roads, to look at the history of our roads, what we've done, crack filling, seal coating, and so forth. With almost 40 miles worth of roads, I don't see that we would ever get to a point of overfixing, if that could be a term. I just believe that having a funding source would help not only the road situation, but also the tax situation, as I pointed out, with property taxes and the levy.
And then, Mr. Chair, my question to the department is much as before. If we create a new program, the assumption is that some other entity gets less. I mean, if we've got X amount of money, and now we've got money going to an entity that wasn't receiving it before, that inevitably somebody else is is losing. And that would be more a department question, I think. I don't know if there's a finance person who would...
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add, Representative Hausman, that these small communities have been losing ever since ever. And in Minnesota here, they don't have access to these state transportation funds like all of the cities over 5,000 have. And I would expect that they will have the same approaches, maybe on a smaller scale, that those cities over 5,000 have had in their planning efforts. As a matter of fact, in our small communities, they often work very closely with the county engineers and have connections to MnDOT there for referral for background and help, etc. So that's what I would expect.
And right, Chair, my question, I wasn't just looking at that particular size group, but I think that's true of all, whenever we do local roads and bridges, I would hope that somehow we're always looking at what's the local responsibility. But
Mr. Peterson, did you want to weigh in on...
Where does the money come from?
On House File 1450? No. Okay. The department doesn't have a comment. Representative Hausman.
Okay. Well, okay. at some point, I guess we'd figure out where we... obviously, some cities are going to be on the losing end of a formula.
Okay. Representative Hugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Draskowski, I like this bill. As a former mayor, I think it's necessary. These small cities and towns that are throughout Minnesota have been losers for years on this, and it's very difficult for a small city to turn around and raise taxes just to fix roads and bridges in the city. We inventoried in Champlin, all of our roads, a pavement index, quality index type deal. Roads last 25 or 30 years. In our case, a good tax base and everything else, we were able to pay on an ongoing basis for rebuilding X amount of roads every year, which you have to do. But small cities aren't able to do that. And Representative Draskowski, I think this offers a very, very good formula and a good opportunity for small cities to catch up. Would you agree?
Representative Draskowski.
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Uglum. As a matter of fact, Representative Uglum, over 700 of the state's 853 cities are in that category under 5,000. And so the vast bulk of our cities in Minnesota have been left out of the ball game in terms of getting state transportation road and bridge funding support forever. So it aims to help that, and appreciate your support for the bill.
Thank you.
Representative Uglum, follow up. Nothing? Okay. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. I think that, Council, I think that we have in place legislation that would allow counties to raise sales taxes to create or to do transportation projects. And is there anything that bars the counties from helping the cities that they have once they've raised that money?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, you're correct. There is a local option sales tax that's available to counties outside of the metropolitan transportation area. That's the area in which CTIP has been formed. That is available for both road and transit projects. I'd have to look up the language, but my recollection is that the transit the road projects that are authorized need to be for a specific project, and I don't believe there's anything restricting the counties from utilizing the funds for projects that would be on a municipal system of a city within that county.
Thank you, and Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that we already have one vehicle out there that has to be exercised by your county commissioners, and they could do that. They could raise money and repair the city's roads that are not, or help you that already don't have the 5,000 or less cities. You already have a vehicle for your use, but you have to have your county commissioners okay. So it seems to me that before we add more tax on more possibility of taxing on people here, that we ought to exercise those that are already on the books. That's the only thing I'm saying. You don't like adding one on top of another. I know that. So,
Mr. Chair, so
Representative Drazkowski,
if I could, and thank you, Representative. We've got some very responsible local government officials in our counties, and they would rather not raise taxes on people. As a matter of fact, they would like to see, I believe, an effort like this that would make certain that that the share of taxes that were already levied upon their people come back to them in the form of road and bridge money, and that's what this bill intends to do.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
you
just had this fellow sitting right here say you raised taxes, and he didn't want to do it, but he did because he had to repair roads. Well, get the county commissioners to do what they have to do and raise extra money to help out your city and others that have less than 5,000. That's my suggestion.
Thank you, Representative Earhart.
Representative Drazkowski. Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I understand this is going to the Tax Committee.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Okay, and then I don't see any sources of funding for the fund that's being established. By the way, let me state, you're correct. I have four small towns in my district that face this challenge, too, and it's a challenge that we need to address. But I'm trying to trace the money a little bit here. If it's going to the Tax Committee, then is it your intention then to raise some tax in order to fund this fund?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, no.
Representative Johnson.
Is it your intention to have funding appropriate for this fund, I assume, right?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm hopeful of that. I'm hopeful that part of the plan that evolves here in the House will dedicate or appropriate or place into this account, or whatever the proper term is, some dollars for this purpose that's outlined in the bill.
Representative Johnson.
And then Representative Drazkowski, it just begs the question, from what tax or from what funding source would you take in order to pay for this? You know, it's, in other words, which you're taking from one spot to pay for this, and I'm curious what you're thinking about, where is best to take from to pay for this.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, I'm not sure. We'll have to work with the chair on that, but we might start with the $2 billion of over-collected tax money from the people of Minnesota that we're expected to experience in the next biennium.
Representative Johnson, additional comment? Okay. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Johnson was getting at some of the questions I had, which is I was looking at the bill and the amendments, and I couldn't find a funding source. And so, you know, as my good friend from The town not too far from me always says, you know, money's not free. It's coming from somewhere. This will be tax dollars that we're going to take to give to your community. And I'm all for the funding source for cities under 5,000 because they have a smaller tax base, and it's very hard for them to raise the funds they need. So I'm very sympathetic. But I also, it bristles me a little bit that we're acting as though this isn't an ask of federal tax dollars or state tax dollars and federal, frankly, on some transportation to fund things that your community needs. And I personally, I don't think that's anything you need to apologize for. I think you have a real need here and you brought it, but I'd like to know where it's coming from. And so you have a great bill here to do something for the small towns under 5,000. That's great, but you're not telling me where it comes from. And the other weird thing is your percents don't add up to 100%. You have 35, 35, and 25. And so there's a 5% missing somewhere, I think. Well, I'm looking at the amendment.
We did change
that orally. Representative Grzaskowski.
We did change that orally, Representative Norton, as we began the bill. It's 30 now.
It's on a separate amendment than this one?
It was, Representative Norton, we modified the A2 with an oral amendment that changed the 25 to 30.
Yeah. Okay, so that helps because I did think there was something missing. But it disturbs me that we're not being more transparent. You're someone, Representative Grzaskowski, that talks a lot about transparency. I believe we've even had that talk in this committee about let's be transparent about where we're getting money. You know, for me to be comfortable, I'm supportive of the concept. I need to know where you're taking it before I can say, great, this is a brilliant idea. We need to spend it here because it's not free money.
I've got Representative Grzaskowski, additional comment.
Just thank you, Representative Norton. And if I knew exactly where it was going to come from, I would tell you today, but I don't. And I'm hopeful that we can use this. I'm hopeful that we can have equity between the small cities and the larger cities in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Norton took care of most of my questions. You keep saying you don't want to raise taxes, but again, that money has to come from someplace. So it's just not, it may be somebody else that you're going to tax to move into that, but it's got to come from someplace.
Well, Mr. Chair and
Representative Grzaskowski
and Representative Mason, I think we can cut taxes immensely in this state and still provide the funding necessary for this bill.
Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Anyone in the audience? Representative Grzaskowski renews his motion that 1450 be passed and sent on to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Representative Grzaskowski, it's passed. Representative Grzaskowski, you're on to taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome back, Chair Kelly. You can take over your own committee.
You did. You did. We made it. Sure. You didn't listen to it.
Okay. Representative Loon. Is she here? Oh, there we go.
Good afternoon, Representative Loon, and welcome to the Transportation Committee. I'll move House File 1525, and members will be laying this bill over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Loon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's actually a pretty short bill. My proposal is to take to dedicate one of the members on the Transportation Advisory Board that are designated for representatives of transit providers and have one of those be a representative appointed by the Suburban Transit Association. It would be an elected official, but specifically for the purpose of representing the four opt-out providers that make up the Suburban Transit Association. And for a little more information, well, first of all, I'm representing Eden Prairie, and so one of those providers is in my community. But the four opt-outs provide terrific service, wonderful bus service in our Twin Cities area, and are significant providers to try to help reduce traffic congestion and provide thousands and thousands of commuters options for traveling every day. And so I do have a couple of testifiers to give you a little more information.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the committee record and proceed with your comments.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Washi. I am a member of the Plymouth City Council, and I also chair the Suburban Transit Association. I would just like to direct your attention. We just have a couple of brief slides that I wanted to review with you before discussing the bill. Just to give you a little bit more background, I know we've been in front of this committee before, and I know most, a lot of you are familiar with the Suburban Transit Association. The ridership showing from 2009 to projected in 2015, if you go back to 1990 when the Suburban Transit Association was just in its infancy, we had 1.5 million riders. That has increased into 2014, where we now have about 5.5 million riders per year, tending towards the 6 million mark probably in the too-distant future. In fact, in 2014, we had a increase in ridership of 3.6%. Also, if you look at the 2040 expected population and employment in those areas that suburban transit provides service in, there's going to be a 36% increase in population compared to roughly a 28-29% increase metro-wide. And then if you look at our employment increase in the suburban transit service areas, 50% increase by 2040 compares to roughly a 36-37% region-wide. So I think just in terms of where the growth has been, where the growth is continuing to be relative to the entire region, those areas that are serviced by suburban transit continue to do strong, will continue to do strong. The other slide that I just want to point out real briefly shows the 12 cities that make up the Suburban Transit Association that belong to that. But also the gray area surrounding those cities shows the travel shed, meaning that all the riders that come from isn't just from the cities that and the residents we have. It comes from surrounding communities. And as you can see, looking at the travel shed, it's quite extensive. That information was provided by surveys we've done in the different communities and by our service providers in terms of just to get an idea of where the riders are coming from and where they're going. So that, I think, is important just to give a context of the area that suburban providers provide service to. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Washi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, James Clark with Messling Kramer, representing the Suburban Transit Association. Mr. Chair, you'll notice from the bill there are 33 members that are currently make up the TAP, the Transportation Advisory Board. What this bill does, there are two that are appointed by the Metropolitan Council to represent public transit. This bill would allow that one of those two public transit representatives on the TAB would be appointed by the Suburban Transit Association. And Mr. Chair and members, we have been in conversation with the council. We continue to be in conversation with the council. They are not, I think it's fair to say they are, they have some concerns about one of the two seats that they appoint from that would represent public transit being appointed from the Suburban Transit Association. One idea that we do have, Mr. Chair, is the original draft of the bill, which would add a member to the Transportation Advisory Board. Again, we're going to work with the council as this bill goes through the process and may actually end up back at that original position where we would just add a member to the Transportation Advisory Board. And with that, Mr. Chair, if there are questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Is there any other members of the audience who would like to testify on this? Is there anybody from the council who would like to? Okay. Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just agree with your last point, adding one, because otherwise suburban transit, I mean, we have only two persons to represent public transit, and suburban transit would get one of those two. All the rest of the system would get one. So that equity would be an issue. So that issue of adding one would seem to be a more reasonable.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, ultimately, I think that is where we will end up.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the total count on this board now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, there are currently 33 members on the board.
Thank you.
Jim Hornstein.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thanks for bringing the bill. I support it. I think there are, you know, some longer-term issues with the TAB that we ought to look at in terms of, you know, Metropolitan Council governance, because, you know, we have CTIB, we have the TAB, we have the Met Council. There was a report by the legislative auditor a couple of years ago that, you know, I think focused on, you know, some of the duplicity and, you know, or duplicative functions of these agencies and boards. And so, you know, I have some legislation that I've introduced that calls for a task force to look at metropolitan governance into the future to see maybe, you know, is the TAB even necessary if we can get some elected officials and others onto the Met Council itself. So, you know, I support this, but I hope we'll keep in mind some of the long-term issues with what's the best way to make the Met Council's governance, you know, more transparent and accountable going into the future. And as we move forward in that discussion, I think there's always a role for the Suburban Transit Association as well. So just wanted to make that point and hope that we'll get this bill passed this year.
Thank you, Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, thanks for bringing this bill. As one of the representatives representing an opt-out community served by the transit, I support this bill and appreciate you bringing it forward.
Any other questions from members? With that, Representative Loon, any other comments?
No, just I thank the committee and Mr. Chair for your time, and it sounds like there's no opposition to the bill, so I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Loon, and I'm sure as you'll be having those conversations, we look forward to that getting an agreement there, and with that, I will lay over House File 1525 for possible inclusion now in this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Newton. Representative Newton, welcome to the committee, and I will move House File 243. Okay. I will move House File 243, and looking at being re-referred to environmental?
It has gone to environmental already, Mr. Chairman.
It has?
Yes.
Environment finance, is that a possibility?
Finance, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'll move that it be re-referred to environmental finance. Yes. Representative Newton, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a very simple bill that provides for the designation of, it's probably a letter designation on the state driver's license that would indicate that someone is a Purple Heart recipient. We currently have designations for senior citizens, disabled veterans, and so forth, so this would be one more designation that the Department of Transportation can accommodate when they redo their IT system is up and the new licenses are being issued.
Okay. Any questions from members? Are there any members of the audience who would like to testify on behalf of this bill? All right. With that, I will move House File 243 be re-referred to the Committee on Environmental Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members, for hearing House File 1903. This bill actually relates to the bill we just heard by Representative Loon, and it relates a little bit to a bill we heard last week by Representative Runbeck. Representative Loon talking about transit issues, including transit issues along 494 in her bill to have representation on the TAB and transit management organizations also, among other things, address issues of telecommuting, which was the bill that we heard by Representative Runbeck. But, you know, the goal of these organizations is to really look at promoting different options for transportation in particular corridors, and this one relates to the I-494 corridor, a particularly busy and congested one. So some of these transit management options that they promote include car sharing, van pools, biking, walking, transit, and telecommuting, among others. Again, with the goal to reduce traffic congestion in a very busy corridor. We know that transit management organizations are among the most cost-effective ways we can reduce congestion, and this bill does a couple of things. One is our regional transit management organization here on the 494 corridor, as other TMOs, do face budget constraints. The federal government has something called the CMAQ program, Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program. It's part of the broader federal transportation MAP 21 legislation, and there are some cutbacks in this federal funding which these TMOs rely on, and so there are all kinds of both staff costs and other you know, office related costs, insurance, etc., that these TMOs need to continue on, and this bill helps to really address the gap in funding that is occurring because of this loss of federal support. So we have some additional staff that is envisioned in this bill, and I have a couple of testifiers that can talk about the transit management organization on 494. And one other piece I wanted to just mention is that you'll see some language in the bill about cities of the first class, et cetera. And what this does is that we want to make sure that the money actually gets to needed destination, and it's passed through from the Met Council, and we want to just make sure that it actually gets to these communities. So that's what the that's why we have that language in the bill, Mr. Chairman. But we have our testifiers, and you know, we can perhaps proceed with that.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Absolutely, please. Introduce yourself to the committee and state your name for the committee record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Brad Aho, and I serve on the Eden Prairie City Council. And as part of my city council duties, I also serve on the I-494 Corridor Commission, which I'm currently chair. And the Corridor Commission, if you're not familiar, is a five-member city organization composed of Bloomington, Edina, Eden Prairie, Richfield, and Minnetonka, those cities. So we hold a very large percentage of the jobs in the metro area in our communities, and 494 is a very important corridor to our commission, to our cities, to our member cities, and providing transportation to fulfill those economic jobs. And so part of our work as the 494 Corridor Commission is to have a TMO, or a transportation management organization. And so we call ours commuter services. And we work with businesses and residents, and in really trying to use a very small amount of money to provide a lot of valuable reduction in vehicle miles. We feel that transportation is so critical, but we can't really build enough transportation in our corridors to really fulfill the needs, and part of that is to reduce miles. And so through the small amount of money that our organization uses, and we have currently have three staff members, we've reduced vehicle miles traveled in an annual amount by 35 million miles. So that is really a significant result given the small amount of money that we use. And we do that, as Representative Hornstein mentioned, through many different methods. We're not focused on any one particular method of reduction of traffic, but many different methods. And so we're very multimodal. And I also have with me our Executive Director, Melissa Madison, of our commuter services. And I'd introduce her and ask her to give you more details about how our TMO works and how we function. But really, this MAP 21 change in funding is really going to affect all of the TMOs in the Minneapolis area, it's very negative. So we're really hoping that we can have this bill passed, which will really help to solidify our funding and make it a lot more transparent. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Melissa Madison. I'm the Executive Director of Commuter Services and staff to the 494 Corridor Commission. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I know that you face many challenges in how you try to find ways to ensure that people and goods and services can arrive at their intended destination in a reasonable amount of time. The TMOs in the Twin Cities, and there are five, were a low-cost strategy to slow the growth of demand, to slow the need for additional roads while offering a high benefit and return on investment. So of the five transportation management organizations, I represent the 494 area. My colleague Dan McLaughlin represents the Minneapolis area, and my colleague Jessica Treat from St. Paul Smart Trips represents the St. Paul area, and so they're here with me in case you would need them to answer questions. I'd like to just briefly share with you some of the highlights of our work, and which would demonstrate the return on investment. 95% of the people who work on the 494 corridor drive alone. Our TMO has a relationship with 870 companies along the 494 corridor, where we are able to promote carpooling and vanpooling, transit, bicycle commuting, and telework. Our staff of three holds 140 commuter fairs on site with large and medium-sized employers and multi-tenant office parks in a year's time. And I'll describe just two representative examples of how our work engages employers and property managers. The Best Buy campus in Richfield works with our staff on an almost daily basis. We manage their commuting programs, including their discounted transit pass program, which Best Buy provides free of charge to any employee that is willing to take transit three or more days per week for their commute. They also have 200 people who are carpooling on a daily basis, and our staff manages their preferential carpool parking program. They have 10 vanpools that travel from the suburbs to their Best Buy to their campus in Richfield, and we manage the vanpool program for them. Best Buy provides a full subsidy for the vanpools and asks employees to only pay $25 per month out of their pocket to ride in the vanpool. Best Buy also has bicycle racks in their covered parking and by all of the major doors. Our staff holds on-site commuter fairs at their campus at least every other month. And a representative example of how we work with multi-tenant office buildings, I'll use Normandale Lake Office Park as an example. We have set up their concierge to sell discounted transit passes to the tenants. They offer preferential carpool parking for carpools who register. They have a special locked room that tenants can use to store their bicycles along with shower facilities. Each year for the commuter challenge, the property manager purchases five commuter bicycles that are given away as prizes for tenants who take the commuter challenge. And so Best Buy and Normandale Lake Office Park are just two examples of the employers that we work with. We found that companies who provide a commuter program are three times more successful at influencing mode change, where people use an alternative to driving alone for their commute. Our staff of three works full-time to engage employers in offering commuter programs as well as helping individual commuters with handheld commuting resources. We help people find a carpool partner. We help start vanpools. We offer customized transit itineraries for individuals so they can learn what their transit is from home to work. We provide them with two free transit passes and the correlating transit schedules to make it easy for them to give it a try. We also provide customized bicycle route planning from a person's home to where they work, providing a recommendation on low volume traffic streets or trails when they're available, as well as a map and tips on how to bike in traffic. In an average year, our staff helps 6,000 individual drive-alone commuters with customized carpooling, vanpooling, transit, and bicycle commuting resources. Over 3,000 of those drive-alone commuters report back to us that they switched to a sustainable commute mode after receiving assistance from our staff, resulting in 35.25 million vehicle miles not traveled as a direct result of our staff. And when we take 35.25 million vehicle miles divided by our budget of 352,000, that equals 1 cent per vehicle mile avoided. And so so the return on investment is very strong with regard to funding TMOs. And the Met Council has recently interpreted eligible CMAQ expenditures will no longer be covered by CMAQ, and that is why the bill is asking the state to contribute funding so that we can continue offering our services. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present this with you.
Thank you, Ms. Madison. We do have a couple of questions. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. I know you mentioned there's five TMOs, and I know Anoka County has a TMO, and I don't see their name written in this. Are they excluded from this extra funding? Are they in the same situation that the ones that are listed in here? Could you please explain to me why I'm not seeing them as part of this bill?
Ms. Madison.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. We did ask Anoka County if they wanted to participate in this bill, and they have chosen not to. And they are affected by the same changes that MAP 21 and the loss of CMAQ funds to cover administrative costs would incur.
Mr. Chair, can I have a follow-up question?
No. Yes.
Well,
yes,
I want to leave. I do want to get out of here. So, I do have the TMO. Is that separate governance from the actual county commissioner, the county board? Correct.
It is. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Madison, you'd made the just a statistic. Did you say 95% of the people commute alone? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, on the 494 corridor, that is correct.
95%. And is there a specific goal? I mean, how much do the TMOs suggest that if through whatever processes and education, is there a goal in that regards? And I guess what is the deterrent? Mainly, I guess maybe that's an obvious question, just the flexibility, but I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. Our TMO does have a goal. We have a goal based on each mode for carpooling, vanpooling, transit, bicycle commuting, and telework each year. And what we find is that if a company begins offering commuter programs, we're able to reduce the number from driving alone from 95% down to approximately 80%.
Okay, thank you. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your comments. I just have a couple questions, actually. The first one is, do we know why the federal government is pulling their funding for this?
Ms. Madison?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there's been a clarification of MAP 21 guidance for CMAQ, and I'm not able to address why it has come about at this time.
Okay, well, thank you. I guess, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be, or my concern would be, that either if they found ineffectiveness in the program, or if, you know, I mean, at all levels of government, I know we have to prioritize our spending, if they just found that there are other things they, you know, want to prioritize, and I would understand that as well. I have some concerns. I know we already have a lot of staff at MnDOT, staff at Met Council that I would presume try and do some of this. I mean, reducing congestion is a priority for all of us, and I fully support that. I want to reduce congestion. So can you just expand a little bit on how this may, or how you think maybe it wouldn't duplicate efforts that might already be happening within different agencies?
Ms. Madison.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a great question. MnDOT does have limited staff that works on promoting bicycle commuting and alternatives to driving alone. This, the main difference between what MnDOT is doing
and what the TMOs do is the TMOs have a direct relationship and work on a daily basis with employers, whereas MnDOT does not perform that function. And then also TMOs work with individual commuters to help them use an alternative instead of just pointing them to a website that they would have to go and learn what the alternatives are themselves.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I would want to see a little bit more information maybe about how, if there are folks at MnDOT that are doing some of this working, as you mentioned, to promote biking, et cetera, if maybe instead of having more people that do similar work, if we can try and streamline and have those folks maybe do some of this as well. Just a comment, and I'll look forward to maybe getting more information on that. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Two-part question. One, regarding the effective date and the counties included in this, I don't believe that Carver has any cities of the first class, and yet it's applicable for Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington. And Representative Hornstein, was that just maybe an error in drafting, or?
I'll defer to
Ms. Madison.
Ms. Madison.
Mr. Chair, would it be okay with for Mr. Lee and Kramer to,
sure,
to assist in answering the question?
Excuse me, Mr. Burris would like to comment on that as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, this is the application clause is standard language that is used as part of special laws issues around the Metropolitan Council. So even if the substantive provision doesn't impact all of the counties, this is what's normally added to a Metropolitan Council provision.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My other question is this. Representative Hornstein, I see that you're making an exclusion for the grant agency to not retain any of the funding here, and yet I think it was in state government finance that we've heard that that is an initiative of the governor. Can you maybe, is this something that you're trying to exclude, or I guess I'm confused in that regard?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, that's an excellent question and one that I discussed with the advocates of this bill, and it's their concern, and they can amplify this if I'm not accurate here, but you know, it's their concern that you know, they want to just, it's in a sense comfort language that this money actually will get, you know, directed to the TMOs via the Met Council. So you know, it's not going directly you know, to these agencies. It has to get passed through the Metropolitan Council, and I think that has to do with and again, some of the issues that Mr. Burris was talking about in terms of the enabling legislation.
Mr. Chair, I'll maybe with Representative Hornstein's indulgence, we can talk about the 4% peel-off later on outside of committee, but this does concern me. A lot of this concerns me, but that also seems somewhat incongruent with the budget that the governor sent forward.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nash, I'm happy to discuss that with you and with the advocates of the bill.
Representative Uglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I mean, you mentioned and talk about how you reduce commute times and people carpooling and things like that. My question is, how do you measure this success versus what would probably happen in the marketplace anyhow with people carpooling just normally, people riding bikes just normally? How do you justify the money spent versus the things that are happening normally?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Madison.
Representative, before the TMOs were in place, the drive alone rate on the 494 corridor was 95%, and through TMO and staff effort to work with employers to reach their commuters, we're able to influence that number down to 80% when a company becomes engaged. And the way I would answer your question is to say that transit service has been available as the opportunity for someone to ride a bicycle and figure out their own way or to form a carpool with someone that they work with. What I can say is that the TMO efforts have created several Try It campaigns that are offered throughout the year. A major campaign in the spring is called the Commuter Challenge. We have another one for Bike to Work Week, another one for Carpool to Work Month, and those Try It campaigns are just asking people to try something one time in the campaign period, and we find that 32% of the drive-alones who participate in the campaign begin using the alternative mode, whether that was carpooling or biking or transit. They begin using it 3 days per week on average.
Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, these are all programs that you've dreamt up and everything else, but how do you know that the impact on high gasoline prices and other individual efforts in individual companies haven't had an effect where you're citing these statistics as they're wholly responsible for your agency? I guess I don't understand that.
Ms. Manson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I've been working for the 494 TMO for 12 years, and the price of gas has fluctuated over that time. When the price of gas was at its highest in 2008, 2009, at that year we, through the calculations of people who drive alone that use our service that we survey, 29 million vehicle miles were avoided that year. And in 2014, when the price of gas was significantly lower, in the $2 and some range versus $4, we were able to work with commuters to then get to a number of 35.25 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think this is, I think there should be a Republican chief author in this. Actually, it talks about smart trips, efficiencies, connections. Sounds like you're becoming a conservative there. I appreciate that, Representative Hornstein. No, I just want to say, and I'm glad you're looking out for areas that historically have maybe been somewhat Republican anyway, or at least bipartisan. So I think your point that we don't want to lose, and I realize that somebody shouldn't take full credit. Some people are going to do the right thing no matter what. But once in a while, I wasn't always a big fan of composting, but Representative Hornstein, the liberal he has got me to understand that sometimes it takes conservatives a little longer to appreciate some common sense things that might cost a few bucks on the front end. So I think, Representative Hornstein, this actually one is one that I hope we can maintain a level. I'm not sure if it needs everything that you have in it there for funding, but I think some there's some important components in here, and I certainly hope, Mr. Chair, I apologize I was a little late, but are we laying this over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
Okay, well, I would think that would be a good move. So thank you, and I appreciate the efforts here.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara.
Are there any other questions for members or any other audience members of the audience who would like to testify on House File 1903? Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And again, these are really important. These transportation management organizations are very important. They have a lot of solid support from bipartisanly at the city council and county board level. And so I know that our partners in all of these communities, we heard from Representative Loon about the travel shed for suburban transit, and a lot of that travel shed includes 494 and some of these other communities that are being supported here. So this is strong backing from local government, and I appreciate your hearing the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. With that, House File 1903 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
We do have a House bill.
Representatives Considine and Tice. Tice. Members, we'll be hearing House File 1669 and House File 2053 together. They're quite similar. We'll hear Representative Considine's bill as an informational hearing, and they'll be working together, as I understand, in moving these bills forward. So, with that, We'll move House File 2053 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Tyus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Basically, what Representative Considine and I myself have found that we have constituents who are greatly affected by some changes that happened recently. This is for transportation-only plates, and they were changed to Minnesota only. And talking to my constituent, she said that now the permitting, and what they do, as I said, it's transport only. So what the company that in my district does is they transport New Flyer buses. So once the buses are completed and they need to be driven, my dad used to drive for them. So I know that a lot of times the buses went down to just outside of Orlando, and it's winter something, and I can never remember if it's Garden or Haven. Anyway, they go there to be customized, and a lot of the buses are used for touring, whether it be for cruise lines or different companies that use them for touring. So once the drivers drive the buses down there, they fly back. When the buses are finished, they fly back down, take the buses, and deliver them. Now, what they need to do with the Minnesota-only plates is they have to map out where the bus is going to go, and they have to get permits from each state. Talking to my constituent, she said that basically delivering that bus to California can add $200 to $250 for each vehicle per trip. So when you're delivering 3,000 buses a year, that's a substantial increase in what your fees are. And because these are transfer only, just for newer vehicles in which they have no ownership, we really would like to go back to the way it was and not have Minnesota only. There is reciprocity in a couple of the states, but this is truly a great burden to them. And the company in my district, Transitech, has been around for 20 years, and she's saying this is going to be a huge, huge burden for her. And her next plans will really be determined on what we do here. And with that, Representative Considine wants to tell you about his constituent. Yeah.
Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to say thank you to the Chair for some guidance in getting this far, and to Mr. Burgess for helping me write it. But it turns out that the Driver and Vehicle Services likes the language better in Representative Tease's bill. So my particular constituent was making a living, feeding his family, by going to Indiana and delivering RVs to various dealerships in Minnesota. He'd been doing it for some time, and all of a sudden he's out of business. So we have basically the same problem for our constituents, and I am told that this will resolve it, and I'd like to see it go forward. It has been attached to the Senate Transportation Bill, Senate File 87. So I think we're moving in the right direction, and I would like to support Representative Tease's bill.
Thank you. Are there any members of the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Questions from members? All right. Seeing no questions, we'd just like to say thank you for both working together. That's a great way to put legislation together when we can come together, and I still understand there may be parts of it that we're still working together on. So with that, I will lay over House File 2053 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members will be recessing, and we'll reconvene in room 200 15 minutes after session. So as soon as we break this afternoon's session, we'll meet in 200 in about 15 minutes afterwards. Thank you very much. This committee is in recess.